Hi and welcome to Better Off Red. This week I'm talking with William Brandt about Michelle Faber's Under the Skin. The most important thing I can say about this week's podcast is it is, it's virtually just completely made up of spoilers. So if you are intending to read this book and don't want to know what happens in it, don't listen. Don't listen to the podcast. The second thing is that William and I both draw a blank as to the writer-director's name of the film of Under the Skin, which stars Scarlett Johansson. That is Jonathan Glazer, of course. And he of Birth fame, which is one of my favourite films as well, and Sexy Beast. So those are the two important, safety announcements. The exits are there and there. It was great talking to William about this book. I think we had a good time. So yeah, thank you.
Isily always drove straight past a hitchhiker when she first saw him to give herself time to size him up. She was looking for big muscles, a hunk on legs. Puny, scrawny specimens were no use to her. At first glance, though, it could be surprisingly difficult to tell the difference. You'd think a lone hitchhiker on a country road would stand out a mile, like a distant monument or a grain silo. You'd think you would be able to appraise him calmly as you drove, undress him, and turn him over in your mind well in advance. But Isily had found it didn't happen that way. Driving through the Highlands of Scotland was an absorbing task in itself. There was always more going on than picture postcards allowed. Even in the nacreous hush of a winter dawn, when the mists were still dossed down in the fields on either side, the A9 could not be trusted to stay empty for long. Furry carcasses of unidentifiable forest creatures littered the asphalt, fresh every morning, each of them a frozen moment in time when some living thing had mistaken the road for its natural habitat.
Okay, so I am sitting in a room with William Brandt, and we both have copies of, oh boy, first problem. Do you say Michelle Faber or Michael?
I actually looked it up.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it is. Officially, it is Michelle Faber. It is. It's a guy, but it's Michelle Faber.
Sweet. We will go with that. A writer of interesting provenance. Okay, and we are talking about Under the Skin today, and I am completely indebted to you for this book. I think that you and I were having a coffee in Dixon Street Deli, maybe, or somewhere like that.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
I said to you I'd seen the film, and I was quite excited about the film of Under the Skin, and you said, read the book. You were really excited about the book. And I went straight from that coffee and went and bought a copy from Unity Books and then just devoured it. I just loved it. I was wondering how you found out about the book.
Yeah, I actually, just before I tell you how I found out about the book, I think that's really cool because that means I read the book first and saw the film and you saw the film first and read the book.
This is a good place to be.
Yeah, yeah. But I just found it in a bookshop. Completely just at random. I just liked the cover and I can't even remember when that was. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, I just happened to be in a bookshop and I thought, oh wow, that's a really cool looking cover. And I just bought it.
Yeah.
I probably looked at the first page or something.
Yeah. Because I mean, that was something we were just talking about, weren't we? Is that this is going to just be a spoiler minefield.
Yes.
This podcast. So if you have not read the book and do not want spoilers, you need to switch off now and come back after you've read the book because I'm just looking at mine and mine actually doesn't have a blurb as such on the back. It kind of just says, Isily spends most of her time driving, but why is she so interested in picking up hitchhikers and why are they always male, well-built and alone? And
right.
I was just thinking, perfect blurb. Yet what it holds is something quite different, doesn't it?
Yes.
So were you reading it? You were a lucky person in that you were reading it with very little expectation.
Yeah. Absolutely no preconception at all. So when I started reading it, I As no doubt he intended. I just thought I was reading a story to start with about a woman who goes around picking up guys, you know, for sex.
Yeah.
And there's just this kind of gradual disintegration of that theory, you know, that you form. And it's real. It's very effective.
Because even though I'd seen the film and had an idea, and I think you'd told me a little bit about the book and where the book sort of changed from the movie, I still was amazed at how that line is kind of like a tightrope is walked between that idea of kind of eating and sex, you know what I mean? Like the things, you know what I mean? Like sort of that idea that the things she would be looking at the men for the purpose she has and the way a person would look at a person for sex are so, you know, like creepily just, ugh, it's really, it's quite interesting.
It is actually pretty interesting. And yeah, that, and not just sex, but love generally, you know, the parent who, you know, like, I could just eat you up.
Something
that's said in all sorts of circumstances.
It's so true. Yeah. It's so true. And, like, that's what I think is so incredibly clever about the language game that he plays in here. And it was one of the things that, to begin with, I really resisted. But in the book, there's that structure where we go from Italy to almost, I'm not sure whether it's a first person or a close third of the men that she's picked up. And that really annoyed me to start off with because I felt like it was giving them a voice that I didn't want to hear. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I actually think it's clunky to start with. The first time you get that, you think, what? Whoa, why are we going here? And then as the book unfolds and you realise it's all about identifying and not identifying and caring and not caring, then you realise he's got to do that.
Yeah.
He's got to go inside the hitchhiker's mind so that you are conflicted.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that... So, yeah, but, it, I mean, I think, like, that sort of comes to this whole thing about the book, which is that second time through is, like, really different from reading it the first time. The first time you read it, you're just, you know, captured and carried along. And the second time you read it, you start seeing the incredible effort he has to make to control your experience. And I actually don't think it's... I found reading it the second time was not as rewarding as the first time. I think it's a one-time book.
And I'm really grateful that you said that word clunky, because that was that was exactly my experience with it, is that I became quite... almost angry about it. Like, I was just like, and I kept finding myself imagining, how could this be done? You know, what's the other way of doing it? And I think, like you say, you know, even as I worked through the book the first time through, I started to really, some of the workings began to show themselves. And I was thinking, this is a huge undertaking. Like, it's not a big book,
no,
but the game that it wants to play is massive. And I think that's where I kind of forgave a lot of the clunkiness, if you know what I mean. Like, I think, you know, because it is a huge ask. Like, it seems to want absolute reality and real gritty kind of reality to play in with this belief of this alien, you know, these people, these aliens. I mean, I just, even when I talk about this book, it just seems so ridiculous, you know, like, it's like, yes, there's cannibalism and aliens, you know, and not your
well, it's not cannibalism.
Well, no, it isn't. You're right. No. You're right. Yes. You know, the use, and I think that's something interesting, is the use of the word human being in the book.
Yes, yeah.
Which is just genius, eh?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the human being are the people like Italy, and the animals are given other names, you know, and the animals are us, you know. And I just think there's something so very clever about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, it, you know, you kind of think, okay, you think he must have an agenda. You know, it reads like a book about the treatment. Obviously, you know, it's about the treatment of animals.
Yeah.
It's about how we treat our animals. And he's asking us to put ourselves in the shoes of the animals that we raise, farm, and kill and eat.
Yeah.
And I think he does an amazingly good job at getting us to do that. But I also think in order to do that, he has to, as you know, as we've just been saying, he has to actually play quite a few tricks, which are not, I guess, you know, you could say are not entirely justified, because the relation of these creatures to humans is actually very different from the relation that we have to animals, really, isn't it? Because he can't, I mean, he tries to say that the aliens who are eating these humans, he tries to imply that they're just so much more advanced than us that they don't think of us as having thoughts and feelings and intelligence. But of course, he's unable to write a character who is that much more intelligent than a human being. So, you know, that's one of the challenges he faces. He has to just kind of somehow tell us that, which is, you know, always less effective than showing us that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I really, you know, as a vegan, what I found really interesting is that I didn't feel like this was a book that was anti-meat industry. Like, for some reason, you know what I mean? Like, I felt, yeah, I felt like it was...
interesting.
Well, I know, it's bizarre, right? Like, yeah. Because I felt like it was more that stuff you're talking about, that idea of trying to escape, trying to imagine an experience which is so far from human, like Solaris or something, you know, my favorite book in the whole world, but you know, like that, to try and it seemed to be so much about bodies for me. Like, this book just to be all about body modification, you know, like the parts of our body that we care about, the parts of the body that we don't, mind body, you know, like what remains, you know, like that thing of where the humans, the meat, I can't remember what they call the humans. Can you remember the name they give
The vodsels.
Vodsels. You know, the idea that they puff them up, fill them, you know, castrate them, make them big and sedentary, and that idea of what remains in the brain if the body changes that much. And I got quite into that side of things.
And like, why, for example, he does those sections we talked about from the point of view of the hitchhikers when she picks them up, but he never writes from the point of view of one of the vodsels after they've been, you know, pumped full of hormones.
And
I thought, that why? I don't know why he didn't. I don't know if he tried that and it didn't work and he cut it out or what. But
because it is a really interesting thing, because what it then does is says this weird thing that, you know, before they were vodsels, they were full and complete people. You know, there's this weird thing where it almost seems, sort of almost seems pro-meat, you know, like, because it almost seems like, you know, once you, you know, these animals, because I've heard that argument before, you know, like, sheep are not the wild sheep, you know, they've been bred to be eaten and the cows have been bred to be milked and, you know, like, we've changed them. And that's what I thought was kind of interesting there. Like, you know, like, there is this body weird stuff where they change the humans into the I don't know what you, what they're called, but, you know, turn them into these animals for eating. And yeah, there's that very... which also seemed a little clunky. There's that moment where the Vodsel spells out, what does it say?
Mercy.
You know, and it and it just, I don't know, like...
And that moment, the Vodsel spells out mercy and she reads it and understands it because she speaks English.
Yeah.
But then she says, there is no word in our language
dumb,
for this
dumb,
word.
Dumb.
I don't... That, to me, is inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because it means this race of aliens, you know, they have this guy who's an activist who's trying to save these, so they must understand about mercy.
And it is really interesting because, again, it kind of... It's just that trap that I am always trying to read out of, is that idea that, again, these guys fall into... parody. They have to be the evil aliens that don't know mercy, you know, they've evolved past caring, you know, and it just seems, I just don't know how you write that, you know. It is so hard to think about how that could have been done any other way, you know, and to not have, you know, the guy that does come, that's the, that lets the Vodsels go, and for him not to seem like some kind of hippie, you know what I mean? It's really tricky, eh?
Yeah, because really, I mean, you know, really the aliens are us in this book.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he's constantly kind of doing that, isn't it? They're, they're aliens and they're completely different, but at the same time, that's actually, he's actually writing about us and they are the ones who represent people in this book, in this story.
I never thought of that before, but you're so right, because, like, I guess, sorry, I'm going to sneak to Solaris for a minute, but with Solaris, there's no, you know, we're not asked to identify with the planet, you know, we're not asked to understand, you know, to we're not asked, I guess, that idea in a novel that you identify with a character. We identify with the human characters. Whereas in here, Isolde is us. You know, Isolde is who we're supposed to, you know, be identify with.
Yep.
And it's so, that's such a trip because, you know, she's bodily passes for human, but, you know, and has sort of been bred into living as a human, I suppose, and that's altered her mind in a way. You know, she's tried, you know, she tries to understand them, and she works with I had a friend that used to work in a freezing works, used to say that, I work with animals, but you know, like, she
seriously, wow.
I love it.
That's exactly what she does. Yeah. She understands people,
she has
these empathetic, you know, emotionally intelligent conversations with them, but she has no feeling for them. Which that actually struck me second time through. She breaks down emotionally by the end, but that is actually, I think, really well handled. She doesn't have an epiphany, and she doesn't go, oh no, they're actually just like me. She never comes to that point, and she's actually very staunchly, look, they're just food most of the way through the book, isn't she?
And there's that beautiful moment where she sees a sheep. And she's how could you even dream of killing a sheep? You know, the sheep, they are beautiful. They are like us.
In the same
way that sometimes humans would say, I wouldn't need a monkey. But and the thing that I love, the success of this book for me over and over again, is her relationship to the planet, like her relationship to the scenery. Like, there's a part in here where it begins to rain and she's with someone, she's with one of her kind who's come from outer space. Well, I don't know. I'm confused about where this planet is, but... Yeah. Has come from the planet and feels rain for the first time. And these moments where she stops and you realize what their planet's like, because a lot of them live underground and, you know, there's this really horrible class system. And there seems to be this absolute attachment to how beautiful the planet is.
And particularly Scotland.
Scotland is huge.
He had moved to Scotland. And I don't know how long he'd moved to Scotland before writing this book. But... you know, he was an alien in Scotland, really, when he was writing it, I guess.
Because there's the odd thing about him, isn't it, that he was born in the Netherlands, is that right? Came to Australia, and then came to Scotland, but has been in Scotland for a long time. And I just, there's something of that, that's what I think is quite nice about the agility of the language. Like, I think, you know, he's lived, you know, in three kind of different accents. Mm. Two different languages, possibly, you know, there's a language in Scotland and there's languages in Australia, but, you know, like, there's something of the language in here, and those were the moments where I just fell in love, you know, just this idea that Vodzil slips off the tongue, that, you know, like, it's interwoven with the alien language in places, there's several different sort of, what would you call it, like, the way the hitchhikers talk is very embodied, you know, like it's their kind of talk. And I think there is something interesting about someone who perhaps has treaded lightly on all those soils. There's something really nice about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, getting back to what you were saying about body, you know, the body image, maybe we could talk about the film for a minute.
Because one
of the big things is that he cast Scarlett Johansson, who's very beautiful, obviously.
As
a character who in the book is this kind of, you know, surgically reconstructed, creaky, weird-looking creature. What do you think about that?
It's really interesting for me because that was one of the things, the modification that takes place on Isolde. So, I mean, I guess... you know, she goes from being quadrupedal to bipedal. She goes from having, you know, like an animal would, you know, several breasts, having two breasts. There's the work done on her eyes, which I think is to make them smaller, isn't it?
My guess there is that her eyes don't work very well on Earth, and she has to wear glasses.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure beyond that.
And there's the constant shaving to get rid of all the fur and leave the fur where she can and take the fur off.
And she was beautiful.
Yes.
She was a beautiful specimen who's been made disgusting in the eyes of her own kind in order to pass amongst the Vodzil.
Yeah. And I think that is what is interesting. It's so weird. The movie itself, I just loved. I think because of the slightness of the plot, if you know what I mean, like very little happens.
Yeah.
I loved the stuff that took part. I think also because I knew a little bit about the story of the movie and that, you know, a lot of it was filmed just sort of on the shoulder. She drove around and would talk to people that weren't actors and stuff like that. I was very interested in seeing, it's in Glasgow, like seeing Glasgow like that. And I was really interested in that. And the scenery of Glasgow is just unfucking believable. But it is odd. She is an odd choice. Like she is, because you don't get any of that pain that she's in. You don't get any of the disconnect. There is the one scene where she realizes she hasn't got a vagina in the movie where she gets, the, you know, and there's that one scene, which is weird because in the book, the different genitalia is, you know, is just the most horrific, you know, like that's part of the most horrific scene. But in the movie, that's kind of played as a bit of a joke, you know, like it's a bit of a, oh, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it's a really quite a tender
relationship
with that guy, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I feel it's a really interesting choice of, it's a really interesting choice of how to play her because she becomes, I hate that word femme fatale, but she becomes a femme fatale.
Well, that is exactly what she becomes. She's a siren, isn't she?
Yeah.
Which, you know, Isolde is in the book in a sense, but it's not what the book's about. See, I feel like, you know, there are different ways that a film can adapt a book.
Mm.
And one of the most extreme ways is just to respond imaginatively to the book, you know, just to use it as a launching off point. And I think that's what this film has done, hasn't it? It's just taken, it's gone, oh wow, there's some great images and some great ideas in this and I'm going to do something with them. And he was, I think he actually had a really good instinct for what would work in a film.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, the bit that he misses out, most obviously, is all of the literal technical stuff about this is how the aliens, you know, processed the people and turned them into food.
Yeah.
There's none of that. You don't.
No.
You know. You have no idea what really happens to these men in the film. But you know it's not good.
Yeah.
But that's it. And there is another film that I wanted to bring up here, which is 2001: A Space Odyssey, which does the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was actually looking that up a bit on the web, and it's a little different because, in fact, I discovered the book of 2001 was being written at the same time that the film script was being written.
Wow, that just blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, by Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick were working together. But Arthur C. Clarke had written two short stories which sort of supply two of the main planks of the film.
Yeah.
Which is why it always seems weirdly like two different stories if you watch it.
Yeah, 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 totally.
So, what Stanley Kubrick does, however, which is the same as what this film does, is that it takes kind of the beginning and it takes visuals and it takes ideas, and then there's a bit in the middle towards the end which is just not very filmic. And so he does the same thing that they got off on the director's name.
I can't remember either.
Okay.
It's the guy that did guy that did the one with Nicole Kidman and I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll apologize. I'll edit it. Every time we say the director, I'll go blip blip.
So both films just substitute a very visual, impressionistic sort of, you know, low content section to stand in for a section of the book which is very detailed.
Yeah.
And in the case of Under the Skin, it's the section where he explains all about processing the voxels.
Yeah.
Which is what his book is about.
Yeah.
And it's not in the film. In the case of 2001, the astronaut who gets taken by the aliens to another galaxy actually visits another alien world.
Yeah.
And he sees it, you know, and he sees the inhabitants and he sees all these things. And that is suggested really, you know, very skillfully by Stanley Kubrick, but not shown.
Yeah. Because I think that's the thing. I was just looking ironically on my book. It says, now a major motion picture starring Scarlett Johansson. Doesn't tell us who the director is on the book either.
For goodness sake.
There you go. Sorry, Mr. Director, now I feel even worse.
Poor guy.
I think that's so true because the other one I thought about is Cronenberg's Naked Lunch. which does seem to riff off Naked Lunch, but doesn't laboriously go through each. Do you know what I mean? Like it does that weird thing where William S. Burroughs's life is kind of interwoven with the book, and you know, like, and I think in some ways some of the best adaptations I've seen have been like that. Like I just think the idea that you riff off the images that you see, because you know that moment of processing that takes place in the film, you know, when they go under the water and the skin kind of, that is so beautiful. You know, I would rather watch that than, you know, kind of one of those crazy silver rooms that you see in science fiction where, you know, they put them on a spin and, you know, and then some dreadfully, what would you call it, like CGI'd version of, you know, the you know, Italy's people, you know, I think would just be horrific. And I think
it just wouldn't work.
It would be hideous. Yeah. Like, I mean, it would work, but it would be very hard not to, you know, I love Doctor Who a lot, but it would be very hard not to Doctor Who it, you know. Yes. And I think that that's, I really responded to that in the film. Like, I didn't find myself wanting a different film, but I found that the book, they sit very differently in my head imaginatively. Like, I feel like they're two separate things, which I really like it when that happens.
God damn it, yeah. Look, you know, I'm just going to agree with you there, because when I watched the film, I was angry because it wasn't like the book. And I came out grumpily saying, what?
Missed all the main theme.
But, yeah, listening to you say that, I'm thinking, absolutely, what is the point anyway of just reproducing the book? You might as well just read the book.
It's like I recently saw, sorry, I'm talking to you about adapting film because you work, you know, you straddle both fields, you know, you work film and you write books and you write film. And I just think, recently I saw Gone Girl and I was so impressed with that adaptation of the book. Like, I loved the book. And the film was just so cleverly done. But as I left the movie theater and talked to the friend that I'd seen it with who hadn't read the book, I realized that it was a much more complete experience because I'd read the book as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was all this life of the Ben Affleck character, which I could see seething underneath his performance that possibly could have been misconstrued. You know, there's a moment in it where there's a big press conference and he smiles, you know, because a camera gets and he smiles, because that's what you do when a camera comes towards you. And in the book, it's just such a horrific moment because it's from his point of view and you get to see all that layering. And I was crediting all that to his performance, which may have been a little bit, you know, overthink. But I think I don't know what my point was. But yeah, this idea of adaptation is so interesting to me because I think Gone Girl is a much more, you know, conventional kind of adaptation of a book. But
see, not having read the book but having seen the film, I found the film to be pretty strained. It was kind of all over the place. You could feel them trying to cram the story into this thing, and they were using, you know, titles and all sorts of things just to get the story in. And so, it's...
And I think that is... I always wonder, you know, that idea, and I really love the way you expressed it, because I think this book shows it a lot. There are things that film can do, and I think 2001 is another good example. You know, there are things that film can do and things that books can do. And I always ask people that work in both media, what do you think about when you think... Like, if you have an idea... Sorry, this is such a boring conventional story, but when you have an idea, do you think this is a film script, this is a book, or how does it, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do. I actually think I'm probably not that good a person to answer that question, because I don't think I actually have a very filmic imagination.
That's so interesting.
In all honesty, I think I really come from it. I'm a very word-based person, and... You know, that's just me. I mean, my favourite films are always heavy on dialogue. And for me, it's, you know, that's where I sort of feel at home, with dialogue and performance. And a film like Under the Skin.
Yeah.
I watched it and I just went, okay, that's pretty damn impressive. But I just felt like I was Italy on another planet, you know?
Yeah. One of his earlier films, Birth, which is just unbelievable. I don't know if you've seen it. It is just, it was a film that I avoided like the plague because the premise is so hideous and just so, and it's got Nicole Kidman in it. But I saw it before this came out, and by crikey, it is a magnificent film. And and I think that's the thing is that, yeah, I think I saw Under the Skin and just thought, yay, no story. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I get quite excited where there's a story where I have to piece it all together. And I think that's, and, you know, I told you about that. Like, when the film finished, Brent kind of said, oh, well, you know, obviously this happened. And I was like, oh, obviously this happened. And we were both like, oh. And I, you know, that kind of excites me that something's so open as that. But in the book, it's very clear what happens, isn't it? Like,
yeah. Yeah, the
like,
book
you know,
is, it's a,
there's beats along the way, and you know, there's one particular, I don't even know whether, I don't even know how to talk about this, but there's a rape in the book. Isley is raped, and then kills the guy that rapes her right there, and then I can't remember how she kills him, but
she
does she beat him to death?
Plunges her alien fingers into his eye sockets.
That's
right,
right.
Into his brain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is right.
It's handy. Very handy.
And then my memory of the book is after this rape, there's a shift in her.
Yeah. Yep.
And I bristled at that because I thought, I really have this problem when I see rape used as a plot device like that. And I really felt, like she was coming to that kind of moment anyway, without that violence, but I don't know, maybe not, you know. I think what I loved is that I thought she was going to come to that point through her work, you know, work problems, because they were talking about bringing another version of her to the planet, you know, like it seemed like sort of almost an economic problem rather than something coming from attack from outside. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, he, it's funny actually the way he treated the rape, in my view, because she's an alien. She doesn't have to have genitalia at all.
No, no.
And she doesn't have to have any understanding of sex as humans practice it.
No.
But he made her very like humans.
Yeah.
In that scene, and that she did have genitals, but they were scarred because of surgery and didn't work. So I don't know why he did that. There's no question but that the experience is one of sexual violation for her.
Yeah.
It's not like just a really bad day at work. Oh, God,
no.
One of the Vodsels nearly killed me today.
No, no.
Yeah. Which it could have been, eh? It could have been. Like, my daughter's boyfriend, his father owns a farm.
Yeah.
And they raise bulls.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what the Vodsels are. These huge, over-muscled creatures that are used for their meat. And managing these bulls, it's quite dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, bulls are not actually necessarily aggressive, but they're huge. They weigh 300 kilos and they can get a fright, or they can, you know, jump, get out of control, and you can be crushed to death against a railing at any time. And, you know, that's another possible kind of model for Isley's experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't go there at all.
Because that, I think that is what I think I'm talking about, is that often this book did slip into sort of things that stand for things, and it seemed that rape seemed to stand for the worst violation you could have. But as you're saying, you know, is it the worst? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like they're turning her all of a sudden she becomes a female, like like as we know it. What am I trying to say?
It comes back to that thing. She has to be us and not us at the same time. And, and you the first time I read it, you know, I was just caught up. And I felt the conflict that he wanted me to feel.
Yeah.
The second time through, you start going, she's us and she's not us. But how does that work?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah,
and I think that was. I think that's exactly what the kind of the misstep that it felt with me was that all of a sudden she went from being this absolutely almost perfect predator, you know, this very highly skilled hunter, and then this happened and it broke her in a way that, and I'm not trying to minimize rape at all, but I just think that there was something weird about the way that it was used that just seemed to misstep her as a character. You know, it felt like it was being used to stand for, you know, it was used to stand for the worst possible thing that could happen to her.
And it becomes, a sort of a male act of dominance,
which
changes her.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, that sort of thing is just so hardwired in our culture.
Yeah.
That it's hard to escape it. And if we go to the film now, see, that is pretty interesting because in the film, it's much more clearly sort of archetypally the femme fatale, the siren, the woman who uses her sexuality and is punished for it by, you know, being raped and in the case of the film, set on fire.
Yeah.
And the book has that also, but in a less explicit way.
Yeah.
Because it's not really, I think it's not really interested in that so much as, you know, the other issues that it's talking about. But that's one of the things that the film really takes up and it becomes quite a central thing. You see, the film is, that's really what it's about. It's about the old stuff, you know, male and female sexuality and the power struggles and the uses of sex.
Yeah, because this is what I think is so interesting. This is what really interested me about Isalee in the book, is that what her power doesn't seem to sit in her sexuality. It sort of does.
Yeah.
It sort of does. But what it sits is in her hunting skills. You know, she's an incredibly intelligent hunter. And also in the fact that she has better technology. Also in the fact that she has no connection with these people. You know, she treats these as animals.
She has no sexuality.
No.
She just has this pair of fake large breasts.
Yeah. And this is what I just so loved and found problematic in the film. You know, sort of looking back on it, was that my interpretation of the film is that the Scarlett Johansson Isalee, the wheels came off well before the rape. You know, like I in my head, the person that she picked up who was, who looked different from all the other people that she'd picked up, I thought she'd realised she'd made a mistake and was going to be fired, you know, and that being fired meant being killed. So therefore she thought, well, I'm going to have a bit of a go at this planet. Seeing I'm going to be fired, I'm just going to go AWOL and have a bit of a go at this planet. Whereas that's not at all what other people have said to me, that they believe that she got compassion at that point. And this is what I love about the book, is there's no compassion moment. There's no moment where she becomes more of a woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no, you know, in inverted commas, whatever a woman should be. Isalee stays. Is that right? Like, my memory is that right to the end, she's trying to find a way out for her own survival, eh?
That's how I see it, yes.
Yeah. Whereas people kept trying to tell me that, people kept trying to tell me in the movie that there was a moment where Scarlett Johansson got compassion and wanted to be a human being. And I really, I couldn't buy that.
God, what did I see? In the movie, I felt that she was trying to become human. I did definitely think that.
Yeah.
She wanted to, become human. I didn't think of the compassion thing was really there, because you didn't really know what was happening to the guys anyway.
No. Because I think that's what I love. That's again what I love about the books, Isalee, is that, you know, what seems to drive her after shit goes down at the farm and it looks like, you know, she's in trouble and that sort of thing. What seems to drive her is she wants to stay on the planet. And that's the big driver.
Yeah,
you know, she wants to stay on the, she wants to stay on
there's
Earth.
There's all that backstory about how awful the alien planet is and what she's escaped, the terrible proletarian sort of nightmare that she's been plucked from to do this job.
And that's what I really liked about it, was that it seemed to be, that seemed to be motivating her right to the end, and it seemed to be about self-preservation. I'm going to talk about the end, which will truly ruin it for everybody.
I think we've ruined it already.
I think it's all ruined. Yeah, there you go. I felt very sad that this incredible woman couldn't live. Like, I felt really sad so wanted her to drive off into the sunset. She's one of the best female characters I think I've ever read, and I felt very sad with the end. I'll just put it out there. What do you think? Do you think, I guess, it does end the book, though. It ends the book, which is good. You know, you want a book that ends, I suppose.
Well, I actually think that it's really good what you're saying there. I relate to that. I don't think it's a very satisfying end.
No.
At the moment, because yeah, it's just like, oh, and then, you know, it's like suddenly he pulled out a gun and shot himself and it was all over. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's at that level really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
because I think, I think the other thing with it that made me a little bit sad is that it was a tidy end. You know, it's like, okay, that puts all the trouble away, you know, whereas the thought of her having to carry on in some way outside of the protection of the farm, outside of the industry of the farm, you know, the fact, because that's another thing I love in this book is that she has trouble eating human food. Like, she can't just go to the dairy and buy some Vodsil food. It makes her physically ill. And, you know, all those problems, I love the idea that all those problems would stay live, but instead, you know, she goes out in a blaze of glory. And, well, it's not really even glory by that stage, is it?
No.
She just blows up.
But I wonder why he didn't just leave her driving off into the sunset, because it would have been much more satisfying.
It really...
You don't want a closed ending do you?
I don't think you do, because then you've got that wonderful thing where they're amongst us, you know, you've got that wonderful feeling where you sort of are thinking, oh, so what is this if she is still around, you know, and then maybe you go to that point where maybe the movie acts as a sequel to the, you know, like maybe...
So
maybe,
why did he do that?
I think it ends the book. I think that... Do you know what I mean? Like, I think... It feels, I don't know, you see,
Like the final hitchhiker is quite different, eh?
Yeah.
And quite interesting because she's not remotely interested in, you know, capturing him because she's left all that behind. She only picks him up because he begs her for help and she thinks it's the quickest way to, you know. Yeah. So there she is, driving someone along. It's her first genuine hitchhiker.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, yeah.
Her first non-professional hitchhiker.
Yeah. The first person that he's just giving a lift because he needs a lift. And what a great place to end.
Yeah.
On a journey, you know, we don't know. Will they get there? Yeah. We don't know. What will happen?
Because his wife's having a baby, isn't it? Is that,
yes.
Yeah, like he's trying to get home to the wife, isn't
he? He's trying to get back to his wife who's having a baby. And, you know, he could be her first human friend.
Yeah. Completely. And you know, there, and then that sort of opens up this absolute, what's the word, like, can o' worms for all that, you know, all that, oh, what am I trying to say? You know, all that higher being, lower being kind of, you know, like, sort of stuff going on. Oh, yeah, we should rewrite it.
I think so. I think we better.
What happens? Oh, no, the ending of the movie is the same. Strong woman can't live.
I think
that's what we're saying. Strong woman can't live.
Saying,
you know,
yeah.
Like, I mean,
strong women who use sex to manipulate men will be sexually violated and killed.
Yeah, what a hideous. Oh, no. I mean, it's our job. Our job now is to unwrite that.
Yeah.
I think that, and I mean, I guess that is the thing, is that there are some archetypal stories.
Mm.
I'm just trying to think, because that is what generally happens in those old school femme fatale movies, isn't it? You know, like the woman gets shot, the woman gets and
they must be punished.
And it just, I mean, it just, and you see, this is why I just loved the fact that in the book I just kept thinking of Isley as a hunter. I didn't think of her as, in that weird way that I didn't feel like it was. Because she seems like the predator from the start. Like, you know that thing you said, like, when you first start reading it? When I first started reading it, I was like, even though I knew what the book was about, I was like, oh, this is a woman out on the make. You know, like, she's looking for a guy. She wants to spend the night with him. She likes having sex, blah, blah, blah. But she was in the picking up position and the boys were in the being picked up position. And whereas there's something different about the dynamic in the film, which seems to be more like that I'm passively sitting here and you're coming to me, if you know what I mean. There's something weird. And even if you think about the cinematography, she often stops and men will come to the car and she asks directions, rather than in the book, she sees the guy, she drives back, she checks him out again, and then she stops for him and he gets in the car. He's never allowed... There's never a moment in the book where someone's leaning in the window saying, oh, you're pretty cute, you know. And I think, I don't know, I love all those changes in dynamic that happen between the book and the movie. I think it's really interesting. Sorry,
I'm
blathering now.
Well, the film, that was, I mean, that's pretty unusual, isn't it? To have a real actress who's that famous driving around the streets of Glasgow in a van, into just stopping and talking to complete strangers and offering them rides sometimes.
Yeah.
She did. Yeah, some she would send some away.
Some she would give a ride to. And yeah. And it just...
And, you know, and she does it really well, I think, doesn't she?
And I think it's the accent as well. Like, I think the accent really works as well, because she does hide behind that accent, and she... Yeah, and
you can see them sort of thinking...
Yeah, yeah.
What? Who is this? What? Who is this?
What's going on?
There must have been quite a few. Oh, you're Scarlett Johansson. Yeah,
Scarlett Johansson. It's brilliant. Yes. I am. I just, I'm sure it must have. It must have.
But it does have a kind of a reality TV sort of formality to it, or something which the book doesn't have. I mean, I didn't for a moment feel that the guys thought they were just getting a ride.
No.
This was just ordinary.
No. Yeah, definitely not. I must say, one good thing about seeing the movie first is that I've never been to Scotland, so seeing that scenery in the movie was really helpful, and I think that's one of the most beautiful things about the film, is there's big vistas, and that beach scene has to be one of the most horrifying scenes in the history of
film. Yeah.
That is just, and when it happens in the book, it's not, you know, it's not like that at all. You know, is it? I don't think it's
there. There is a beach. Oh, that's there's a woman on the beach with a dog. That's all it
is. That's all it is. But in the film, I just have never felt so panicked and horrified in my life. Like, it was so well done.
It was so good. That was the moment in the film when she really became an alien from another planet, didn't she?
And what's weird about that, oh God, sorry to put on my feminist hat again, but what's weird about that is the moment she becomes an alien is when she disregards the safety of a child. You know, like, so, you know, she... She's mother, she's whore, she's martyr, you know, she's...
She's not even a good mother.
She's not even a good mother, God damn it. But it is so true. Have you read the new Michelle Faber that everyone's raving about? Neither have I.
No, we better get on and read that.
Yes. That'll be very good. I don't really have anything else. We've done a good... You've got a notebook. Check your notebook. Make sure we haven't missed anything. Yes. Oh, man.
Predator.
She really is... one of my favourite female characters.
Oh, you see, I said here, film, she becomes victim of predation.
Yeah.
It's turned back on her.
Yeah.
She is predated.
Yeah.
And in the book, she is a predator to the last.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's
true. I agree.
Yeah.
And you see, I was desperately thinking in my mind of another book where a female is a predator like this and not a not a flame for the moths to come to. Do you know, like, not like a Black Widow?
Which I haven't read, but I think it's a kind of a... what's it called? Something about Weekend.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's just like a woman goes and shoots a bunch of guys or something.
Oh, okay.
Takes revenge.
Let's do that. That sounds great. I will look it up.
Sorry, I can't tell.
Because then again, you know, it's so interesting as well.
It's from, like... The female taking revenge, they're not doing it now, but when were they doing it? It was sort of in the '80s, I think, for a bit.
Yeah, There was some great.
What happens in Desperately Seeking Susan? I can't remember.
Oh,
remember
that
one?
Something does happen in there. I will look it up and put it on the website.
From what I remember, that's about this. But yeah, that's really just like a screwball comedy.
Yeah. But it seems like there was space for it there in a way that there isn't now. Like, I just, like, the big thing I always remember was the man being tied to the tree in Auckland, you know, which really happened.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like, it felt in those days that there was a lot more calling out that perhaps even in this day where you've got social media and stuff like that, there seemed to be a lot more calling out than there was now, which is kind of interesting. Oh my God, it's so interesting. And you see, that's the other thing about this book, which is interesting rhetorically, is that Isley is always in close third person. The men get a first person narration. Do you know what I mean? Like, the rapist, I'm sure, gets a first person narration. You know, like, it's coming, it's their thoughts verbatim coming out of their mouths. Now we're both looking at our books to make sure I'm correct. Da, da, da,
yeah,
da,
it's closer. It's much it's closer. Closer. Yeah, fantastic tits on this one, but God, there wasn't much of her otherwise. Tiny, yeah. Like a kid peering up over the steering wheel. How tall would she be? 5'1", maybe, standing up. So it is actually, it is third person, but it's a much closer.
Yeah, we're right in their thoughts in a way that I don't there. Think yeah. we get to Isley, which quite is because, right. yes. you know, she's yeah. she's the alien and we can't be, you know, she has to yeah. be different from us. She can't be the same as us.
Also, to be fair, that's a lot harder to read if it's the
oh
whole book,
god eh? Yeah
yeah it's good yeah. for a short bit
because it is yeah. I like that. I'm glad that you use that word clunky, because when you do trip mm. over it, I was wanting it to finish. I was just saying I don't want to be with this man. I want to go back to the funny lady yeah. driving the car. Yeah. No, it's really weird.
My recall is that the actual rapist, we don't
oh do we not
he, no but
oh that's
just,
right because yeah. he's kind of impenetrable, like his coat, you know, that's
yes.
the reason shit hits the fan, is because he's got the big coat on, which means that her special needles out
yes.
of the car seat don't hitchhike, kids, yeah, like the needles out of the car seat can't get
yeah.
him with the with
yeah.
the drug
yeah and he,
yeah,
yeah
oh, that's
this,
right he's completely
yeah.
and she can't get a read off him either,
that's right,
like she's
yeah.
oh, you know, and it's a mistake and she doesn't want to pick him up and oh my goodness
mm.
oh jeez,
and you know, yeah, and the film keeps the overalls, the bright yellow overalls.
Oh, it does, you're right
yeah.
Oh my god, that's no, horrible.
It is, isn't it? I mean,
horrible.
It's a good choice.
It's a very good choice because they are terrific. Oh,
mm.
they're horrible.
Mm.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You
rock.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun.
We rock. Yay. Yeah.